Welcome to a brand new episode of the Z2 Podcast, where three friends get taken over by cosmic radiation and become mutated beyond their belief. As always, I am your doctor with a PhD in Doom, Zach, and joined with me is the invisible one himself,
Zach,
and the fantastic one.
Aw, Steven.
And the best news ever! It's 8 o'clock. Lord. I'm really freaking
Your
tired.
Your voice is super raspy. You're like dying over there.
So at 8:30 this morning, I got up, left the house.
Did your Hotspurs get a little too exciting for you?
Oh my God. So I went for Easter Sunday. Happy April Fool's Day also, everyone. I went to go watch some footy at my favorite English club down in Denver. So, watching some sports, and Chelsea was playing against Tottenham Hotspurs, and the Spurs won 3-1 with one goal by Eriksen and two goals by Mr. Dele Alli himself.
I'm kind of like sorting through these of like which ones actually we care about still.
Well, we can use all of them.
I know, but which ones are characters and which ones aren't?
That's fair. We have Zach's going through our D&D miniatures as I'm talking
that's
about
exciting
soccer.
About your footy.
Yeah, dude. Tottenham's pretty much solidly locked into fourth place right now in the Premier League. So it's pretty exciting. This is the first game they've won in, like, I want to say more than two decades at Chelsea's home field. So it was pretty impressive.
Are Chelsea ahead of them?
No, Chelsea's rocking fifth place right now.
Well, okay. Good news. I just got a message. Apparently I'm back, so the question is, do we want to record right now?
God damn it, that thing fucking sent now.
No, my phone was dead when I got home. And
no, my phone refused to
I just got that message, too.
Stuck on
Facebook Sunday. Messenger has been screwy a little bit.
Yeah, I don't get notifications.
Facebook did just update their shit, so.
I wonder why.
So the best news that I was excited about is that the Fantastic Four are finally returning. And this
after 3 years.
Well, see, you're not the only one excited about it. I'm excited because they might make Doom a fantastic villain now.
Already
or
starting.
At least an interesting villain.
Tim, you know where to go to yell at us this time.
What's been really great is that they've also confirmed that Chip Zdarsky's Marvel 2 and 1 is going to continue. So it's going to be like the Thing teaming up with Doctor Doom and other characters as well. But Fantastic Four is being written by none other than Mr. Dan Slott, with art by Sarah Pacelli, which is really cool because this is like one of the few times she's done a non-Spider-Man character for a story arc.
She's pretty much only done things with Bendis, right?
Yep.
Well, that confirms that he's not taking her as well.
But we got Alex Maleev doing Green Arrow covers at DC, and I want to call him Gyarados, but that's totally not right. Gyarados?
Magikarp?
Michael got it. Gyarados.
Doing art with the Jinx World titles.
Gyarados, did you see the Pokemon Go April Fool's joke?
No, I didn't.
It's not a joke.
They released 8-bit for Pokemon Go.
Yeah, it's not a joke.
So now the Pokedex and when those sprites show up on the map, they're in 8-bit.
No, not when they show up on the mat, just in your Pokedex and on your radar.
Okay.
I still play Pokemon Go, so
I turn it off from time to time.
I mean, ever since I swapped from iPhone to Android, there's no point. I'd have to start over.
Connect with your Gmail account?
Oh, yeah, that's true. I thought it was, I guess that's true. It's
or your Pokemon Trainer Club account?
I don't care enough.
So I open it up when I'm at the movie theater because I'm like, three Pokestops right here. Neat.
I just go running a lot. Woke up at like 6 this morning.
I sorted them. Literally only two of them are going to be reused as players. Everyone else is now an NPC or boss.
That's what you think. Let me see.
I can tell you who's going to be reused as a boss already.
Well, there's a couple kobolds in there as well.
I think there's some more characters also in the
starter set box. I'm sure there's some kobolds over there too.
But
I didn't show you my new dice.
The really exciting thing is that we have a Fantastic Four series again. First time they've been around since the end of 2016's Secret Wars. And I mean, there's like the rumors.
Are they finally going to explain what the fuck they've been doing this whole time?
They have.
Have they? I thought they were just
that was the last
around.
Page of Secret Wars.
Yeah, but were they literally doing that for 3 years then?
Probably.
Granted, the Marvel Universe, how long it wasn't only like 6 months have passed or something?
Yeah, I mean,
like that?
Considering that from when Gert died to her coming back was only 2 years.
It's true.
Marvel sliding timeline.
Well, there wasn't, there after Secret Wars, there was what, the 6 month jump?
Yeah.
Okay, so I'd say at least a year has passed. Probably. So they've been dicking around in space for a year.
But they are doing something fantastic. But
creating universes.
Let's be real, this is the perfect book for Dan Slott too. He's very much invested in like the high tech characters. I'm really glad he's shifted to Iron Man.
I mean, kind of
doing Spider-Man as well.
Did he kind of like pseudo do a story like this with Spider-Man?
No.
More or less.
He got to explore the galaxy doing his Silver Surfer story with Michael Allred, I think, was his artist. And that story fucks you up because it's like, it's very much human condition-y thingy with Silver Surfer in his stead, but it's really entertaining and really exciting. So I'm really glad to see that Dan Slott gets the chance to actually expand with the cosmic universe of Marvel, since no one else has been playing with that. Now that like Al Ewing is now doing Earth stuff with Immortal Hulk and Ultimate Squared isn't around anymore.
Yeah. I don't know. It's a welcome return because everyone's just like, where the fuck are the Fantastic Four? Like, where's this book?
Yeah, I gotta say the freaking, like, the hints out of to what was to come was probably, like, the weirdest. Like, their promo material is like, tune in on Instagram for more information. It's a picture of Spider-Man, Black Panther. I think Thor's hammer is there at one point.
So you're
and,
like
an X-Men
okay,
symbol.
Okay, Avengers?
And I'm like, are they going to announce a new Spider-Man book or a new Black Panther book? I'm like, but wait, if you look closely enough, all those characters with have my served on the Fantastic Four at one point.
Huh.
Or yeah, the Future Foundation.
Yeah. Spider-Man did join for a little bit. Wasn't that like their lowest?
This was Teetle.
Selling run.
No.
Well, Spider-Man, I
the thought most recent one was when the Human Torch died. And they experimented becoming the Future Foundation instead of the Fantastic Four. And they were trying to like expand the scientific reach of Earth and everything else. There's like ye old what if universes too of when Spidey joined them. But like,
yeah, I think that was one of like the what if Spider-Man joined was like one of the lower selling Marvel titles.
Which is weird, you would think, because it's like, that seems like it fits, right?
They're all in New York. Who knows? But I mean, I never really gave a shit about the Fantastic Four until I read Hickman.
True.
Like, he,
yeah,
from his Fantastic Four run into his Avengers into Secret Wars, it all being one giant continuous Fantastic Four story was absolutely incredible.
Yeah, that was a very, very epic storyline.
Yeah, I'm just excited. And Pacelli doing art's really exciting, too.
Yeah. I'm wondering, it seems like Marvel's just slowly rebuilding their multiverse. Because, I mean, in the latest Spider-Gwen, they revealed there's an Earth 617 now. The very end of it.
I'm so behind on Spider-Gwen.
Yeah, pretty much Gwen's known for hopping dimensions at this point. It's not uncommon. But she gets thrown to Earth 617. So I'm like, huh. Marvel is really just hinting that they're try to bring their multiverse back, and maybe the Fantastic Four is going to confirm that.
I mean, I kind of feel like it's like what I said last week, where it's Marvel trying to get back to basics.
They're trying to rebuild all the things.
Yeah, the Fresh Start initiative.
It's like they're taking the Fresh Start to a new level, where it's like, what if we bring back the OG series that made Marvel a household name?
What's kind of funny is it's like Hickman leaves at and pretty much like implodes the Marvel Universe with Secret Wars, and he's like, all right, I'm out, you guys do whatever. And he's probably just like watching, like, no, this isn't what I thought you'd do at all.
Editorial told me to do it. And it's very interesting to see if Hickman's going to return. Like, they're finally releasing his last two issues of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Which is fucking ridiculous that that's finally happening, and two, that it took this long.
Yeah. Other things that, like Marvel related that weren't on our list, with the, advent of, Infinity War coming closer, Marvel announced their summer event, Infinity Wars, with an S.
Because you know what works so well? All right, doing a sequel to an event.
Hang on. Let me get some air in here.
But I mean, come on. Civil War 2 was a gigantic hit, right? And doing a second Secret Empire? Oh, such a good choice.
Haven't they done in like variations of Infinity War like 3 times now?
No.
Well, you had
Infinity Gauntlet.
Yeah, the Infinity Gauntlet thing with like Star-Lord and them dicking around in space. That was post-Secret Wars.
No.
Yeah, it was.
Secret Wars.
The OG Infinity Gauntlet?
No. Not OG Infinity Gauntlet. They had something else.
That was a Secret Wars tie-in.
Was it?
Yeah.
I thought there was something else that happened after, too.
No.
Because there hasn't been an Infinity War event, has there? It was Infinity Gauntlet, and that's where everything went to shit.
Yeah.
Or not went to shit, but that's where the event came from.
Yeah, Infinity Gauntlet, where the opening page is Gamora's dialogue of Thanos snapping his finger to implode universes.
Still one of my favorite parts of that trailer. It was just that little monologue. He could wipe out half the universe with a snap. I was like, ha! Because he did it in the comics.
Nice.
I really hope
Snyder bringing a Batman meme into metal.
Well, yeah. It's like, that's what I was joking about like the longest time with, I want them to bring the Fantastic Four into the Marvel Universe just so they can die in the half a universe snap in the beginning. That's the only reason. But
should they come back?
Yeah, it's like, we're here!
And you got
fuck!
Like I said, I really want Infinity War, the movie, to just be as brutal. Like, you know, ripping off Tony Stark's head and then him beaming Spider-Man with it. Or turning Thor into ice and shattering him.
I don't know if they're going to go that brutal.
It's pretty epic.
It'd be fucking cool.
Hey, I would
respect the fuck out of Marvel if they did that.
I'd be like, you know what? Bravo. Oh, bring on the next 15 movies. You got me. But, you know, I don't think they're going to take these characters that become beloved over 10 years. Be like... What if, now just hear me out here, what if they take Tony Stark, just crumple him into a ball, Space Jam 2.
Mommy, what happened to Iron Man? Don't look, Billy, don't look.
He transformed into Iron Ball.
Mommy, what happened to Tony Stark? Oh, Thanos sank a shitty slam dunk with him. It's like, but Mommy... So, there he go. He's on the floor over there.
He's there. He's over there.
With Infinity Wars. So we're in the middle of Infinity Countdown right now, which is part of...
That's what I'm thinking of.
Yeah, dude. It's like Countdown to Final Crisis, and then they went to Final Crisis at DC.
Sure,
don't talk about Countdown to Final Crisis. We never reference it. It was a very bad series. But we'll talk about Countdown to Infinite Crisis, where good old Ted Kord gets fucking ganked. But with Infinity Wars coming out, Gary Dugan, who's been experimenting with the cosmic odyssey of Guardians of the Galaxy and everything else, and artist Mike Diodato Jr. and colorist Frank Martin will answer the question of Countdown to What? Which is Infinity Wars Prime Issue 1. And this is coming from the Marvel website itself. The heroes and villains of the Marvel Universe reap what they sow as their frantic search for the Infinity Stones leads to the cosmic madness like never before. The simmering events of the recent months spiral into something much, much bigger in this colossal story. Prepare to hear all the details from Marvel at C2E2 on April 6th through 8th.
Why do I think they got Lil Jon for their... promotion for Countdown to What?
Countdown to what?
So, like, I want that to be their entrance music at C2E2. Is just Countdown to What and them just walking out to some sick club music.
So the cover for Infinity Wars has Thanos, go figure.
No way.
Loki.
No way.
Star-Lord. Captain Marvel. Gamora. Doctor Strange. And I think Adam Warlock. So it's like, oh, hey, it's the MCU.
Plus Adam Warlock, because he's technically not born yet.
Yes. He was the character hidden at Guardians 2, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, I mean, that's really the only Adam it could be when she's like, I shall call him Adam. Like, Adam Warlock, woo! I want him to show up in Infinity War. But it probably won't happen because they've done nothing to build up the fact that he would be part of it.
I don't know.
So what's actually really cool about Infinity War, the movie, is that as the Russo brothers did everything, James Gunn comes in and he wrote all of the Guardians dialogue.
Nice.
Which, as he should. I think it's really cool that they're bringing on the specific writers who have created these characters.
Ridiculous if you think about it.
Yeah.
It's like, this is like literally what like the Marvel like comic writers do. They have their Marvel what summits they call them or something.
Mm-hmm.
And they all get together about like what's going to happen. It's like, that seems like what they're doing with the movies now.
I just like to imagine that they're all in a big room writing and you just see Joss Whedon poke his head like, hey guys, hey.
No, Joss. Hey,
Joss, nope, Joss, nope. No. Hey, no. No Russian families.
Well, he left on his own accord technically because he got fed up with all the Marvel politics. But it's like, hey, you remember when I was supposed to introduce Captain Marvel 2 movies ago? Bye.
And you didn't let me.
Hey, you remember when Spider-Man was supposed to be in that movie too? Bye.
But at the same time, like, no Russian families, bye.
Meanwhile, the Russo brothers are like, how do we make another arm joke with Bucky?
Like, please. What? I can't hear you over the piles of money from our movies.
Russo brothers, do not fail me. Please.
How can we add another cameo from Community?
I don't care that Captain Marvel's still a way out. I just want to see.
Well, have you heard the news that there might be? Again, it's April Fool's Day. I don't know what to believe. But there's supposed to be a teaser trailer this week.
Well, then again,
did the report come out today, or did you see it today?
Then again, teaser trailer could mean one of two things. One, it could tell you the whole story of the plot, or
they show her,
or it'll be, or it'll just be like fade in from black Captain Marvel. The end.
I could see them like, no, they probably, there's no way they have CG even close to done at this point, even like little bits of it, just because they're only like still in the middle of filming.
I do think that Captain Marvel will show up in Infinity War.
She just needs to make an appearance. She doesn't even have to do much. She doesn't have to be there long. Just fucking show her what she's going to look like, what she does.
Well, because she posted.
Get people hyped.
Posted the pictures on her Instagram of her on set of Infinity War.
Yeah.
Which leads me to believe, like, they wouldn't really have her on set unless...
They cut her. They already confirmed they cut her.
But what if it's a very elaborate trick?
Like, you know, the whole... Insert Guardians of the Galaxy 2 spoiler here, because Zach still hasn't seen it, even though it's on Netflix now.
It's prominently on Netflix, like, every time I go on there. It's in multiple categories.
Like, Mary Poppins was on the set of Avengers, and then... You think I'm joking?
No, I know. I already know what you're talking about. I already know everything about what happens to Yondu. I know.
Yondon't.
No, I definitely Yondu.
He may be your dad.
He ain't your father. Yes, I know that line too. I've had so much of Yondu.
Just watch the movie.
I know. I need to.
It's so good.
It's not that I don't want to watch it. It's that I don't. I just haven't put time aside for it.
He may be your daddy. He may be your father, but he ain't your daddy.
Speak of the guy who watches hours of Overwatch a week.
Well, that's in like bite-sized pieces, though. That's not like, usually that's not in 2 hours. And most of it's in the background.
Even yesterday, when you're like, I'm going to play some Switch. I'll put on Achievement Hunter. Could have put on Guardians instead.
Okay, that's my problem, is most of the time, like, Achievement Hunter and stuff is all background noise. I don't like putting movies on in the background because I want to pay attention to it.
Because
then I'm only half listening.
You can just watch a movie with subtitles and force yourself to pay attention. Change the language to Japanese, then it's like you're watching anime.
Ah, yes, domo arigato, Captain America.
Mushy mushy.
So in other news, too, the...
Ikatakimasu. FX, that doesn't even belong in the scene.
The FX Deadpool series officially got canned. Don Glover was... part of the writing staff on the series too, and as kind of I think it's a middle finger to FX, he posted a script onto his Twitter.
Well, I don't know. Or that'd be kind of weird if he gave them a middle finger since Atlanta's still going on FX.
I think it's more along the lines of like a Max Landis situation. Of it got canceled. They said they have no
like
plans to pick it up, so
he sees this.
He just wants to get it out there to show people what could have been.
Yeah, so according to Polygon this week...
It's kind of like the... Sorry.
I'm trying to keep the show going.
I was going to make a correlation, but go ahead. I'll wait.
It's fine.
It's like when the Deadpool footage got leaked, like the early animation stuff.
Yeah, maybe there'll be enough outcry that they're like
this looks fucking awesome, like, let's make this.
We want this.
Yeah, but so going along with that, though, when he posted this Deadpool script on Twitter, is very self-referential about the show getting canceled. So that's, like, he made the claim of, like, yeah, this would have been the final episode for the season because people are like, oh, yeah, you know, Donald Glover's just too busy with his music career and his TV and film. That he's
almost done with.
That, and so he kind of posted this, not necessarily as a middle finger to FX, I would take that back, but as, like, to all the people who's like, yeah, no, I could have done this. This series just got canceled. Is it in this?
Well, can it be canceled? It just never happened.
Well, it probably got through pilot, but it didn't get reordered for episodes. Because that's usually how they do it, is they'll make an early pilot just to kind of get excitement. And if they like it, they'll order the episodes. But I guess they didn't like it or didn't see a place for it in their lineup, which is kind of stupid.
I can't find it on Twitter anymore. I wonder if it got taken down.
Maybe.
Especially since FX split into FX and FXX.
Yeah. I don't know. It seems weird that they wouldn't try it. They wouldn't pick it up unless it was just not what they were looking for, just because I think Archer's on its last season, so they're probably going to want to replace that with something. I think Archer's on its last season, right?
One more. Yeah, I think the current one is...
Are they on season 9 already?
I don't know.
Because I know season 10, they definitely said that's the last season. Archer, current season... Okay, they're only on season 8.
Oh,
so
still got
or they did. They finished season 8 last year, so if they release more this year, it'd be season 9.
Yeah, they have a season coming up. I think it's like Danger Island or something.
Okay. So yeah, they have 2 more seasons of that.
Which Archer took a weird turn.
I still haven't watched season
8. I haven't watched 8. Archer in Dreamland.
Yeah, I haven't watched that one. I actually haven't watched season 7 either. I need to do that.
I think 7 was the last season
I watched. Or, no, I started 7. Yeah, because that's where they're in... That's the detective agency, or the private eye, isn't it?
No, that's Archer in Dreamland, which I think...
No, that's the 20s one. This one's before that, I think? Yeah, I think I'm on season 7. Because season 6 is where they get finally, like, are told, no, you can't be... ISIS anymore, or whatever they changed their name to.
Right, and then they came back as to ISIS. Or they... ISIS, because they were, like, under a government contract.
Yeah, and then they failed that. And then they're like, you can't be spies anymore, so they become private eyes instead under Cyril's corporation.
Which I think that's what this season's going to be. Because I think it went from that to Archer Dreamland.
Yeah.
And now they're coming back, and it looks like... Because the preview I saw was, like, more of a Cyril-focused preview.
Hmm. Yeah, I need to catch up on that show.
So reading it from comicbook.com, it seems as though there was actually test footage, too, for the Deadpool animated. Just very much like the movie. And then, at this point, Don Glover has deleted all of his tweets.
They probably said, like, hey...
All of it.
Yeah, no, I'm sure FX
no,
is like...
No, like, all of his tweets.
Wait, oh, straight...
His, like, social media account is not existing anymore.
Weird.
He probably got...
He does this a lot, though.
Well, he might have also got hit with a strike. Maybe there was some NDA that he violated that forced his Twitter to get blocked for a small amount of time.
Weird.
He also, like, the guy's very complicated. Like, very depressed and, you know, just everything else. It's very sad. But, like, he does this a lot. Like, deactivates the social media, reactivates it, and all that jazz. But anyways, like, the series only had, like, a 10-episode order. FX decided not to go through with it. And again, it's probably kind of like they didn't know what kind of tone they wanted. And Don Glover, he makes amazing punches. Like, the comedy added to Black Panther was amazing. But it's going to be along the lines of like, well, crap, we're going to make this mature animated Deadpool show. Well, it's a superhero show, so all these kids want to watch it. And I don't know if they knew what they wanted out of it at that point.
Which is kind of weird since, you know, they're the ones making the Deadpool movie. I think they kind of know what to expect at this point. Be like that, but animated. I don't know. Seems weird, but it was out there for a moment.
In the great ether of the internet.
Anyways. As we scream into the void. Embrace the void.
I'm honestly wondering if we're almost done with Deadpool at this point. It feels that way about Harley Quinn.
We say that, but I feel like the second movie is going to revitalize that.
Yeah.
Because that's coming out in May?
Yeah. So X-Force Minor.
X-Force Minor.
Yep. They've even kind of confirmed, like, this is almost like preparing them to do an X-Force movie if this gets received well and the supporting cast gets received well. Imagine Cable, Shatterstar, Terry Crews, Domino, all the B-list and C-list heroes.
Hey, Terry Crews is A-plus list.
He's almost...
No matter what hero he's played, he makes that hero A-list.
But the reason I bring this up with like Harley Quinn, we're on our third creative team now. Have you guys seen the new creative team that's lined up?
No.
Sam Humphries.
Oh, really?
And he is doing Harley Quinn meets the fourth world. So Harley Quinn meets the new gods. Not oh god, oh gods. So it's actually really cool to see him get like this level of responsibility. And he says he's even going to ground Harley in to like the DC universe to actually make her like, yes, her book isn't all just straight comedy anymore. It's going to have some real world stuff. Or not real world stuff, but it's going to be part of the universe at large now.
What I would love to see is a spinoff from where Tom King left Harley and Ivy right at the end of his Batman thing. Granted, Ivy's being sent off to Sanctuary, which that's going to be pretty cool to see. That I forgot about that series is coming pretty soon. Just because though it seems like Tom King has pretty much like done like all my favorite ships in the DC universe so far. He's done freaking Batman and Catwoman. He's done Harley and Ivy now. I'm just like, you have not failed me, Tom King. Please continue.
If only Sajid got his wishes to do like a DC Black Label Harley Quinn.
Oh my god.
Poison Ivy Sunstone-esque
so
story.
Fucking incredible. I would read the ever-living fuck out of that book.
So real quick, as today is April Fool's, and don't go checking this when you actually hear this episode because it'll have changed by then. Pornhub today is Hornhub.
Drum Corps!
Which is a mix, from what I looked through on the front page, was like French horns.
Nice.
Bull horns.
Do they still have like terrible porn titles?
And horns aplenty. Oh god, yes. There was one of someone was cleaning out the inside of their tuba, and it was girl deep or fists horn deep. Another one was a line of women in military uniforms playing on horns. So seven women blow horns. It's like, you know what?
Last year they did Corn Hub. This year we got Horn Hub.
Soon we'll get Pork Hub.
God. Oh no.
Don't give them any ideas.
We don't need that.
You don't
want that.
So DC, this is coming from their website. This summer, DC Entertainment launches a bold new direction for the clown princess of crime, Harley Quinn, with creative team writer Sam Humphries and fan favorite Harley Quinn artist John Timms, taking the DC's Maid of Mischief to Jack Kirby's Fourth World. Humphries goes on to say the biggest challenge for Harley is defining if she's a hero or villain. But why can't she be both? Why is there a third choice, or is there a third choice to explore? My vision for the book is, what if Bugs Bunny were a chainsaw hosting Anthony Bourdain's show, but in the DC universe?
I'm going to need you to repeat that first line again.
What if Bugs Bunny were a chainsaw hosting Anthony Bourdain's show, but in the DC universe?
A motherfucking
in our
chainsaw.
First three-issue story arc, John Timms and I are going to bring the crazy Kirby crackle to Harley Quinn, focusing on the manic energy that made us cheer for her and the tragic emotions that made us fall in love with her. So they're going to be starting on issue 45 that features Harley getting kidnapped by two female furies from Apocalypse who deliver her to Granny Goodness with an offer she can't refuse.
Oh, God.
Huh.
Humphreys does go on to say that Harley Quinn does and says the things we all wish we could get away with. She's the embodiment of wish fulfillment. Harley is a wild card, and she's a survivor. Two things we all want to be at different times of the day. And Apocalypse is just the beginning of our plans for Harley. No one in the DCU will be safe from Harley Quinn. I'm excited. Oh, I don't read Harley Quinn.
Is this where that image of her in like battle armor comes from?
Yes.
Okay. I saw that come up today. I'm just like, okay, neat.
It's going to be pretty exciting. I don't know. I
sounds cool.
As soon as Humphreys left Marvel for the greener pastures of DC and literally the greener pastures.
He's been allowed to like flourish and like just actually prosper in his writing style.
Yeah. People just fell in love with him. It's like, oh, he only had Nightwing for one arc. He's like, yeah, guys, that was part of the plan, but don't worry. I'm doing something better or bigger that's being announced. And it's like Harley fucking Quinn. And everyone's like, okay. Good. Good. Do it. So moving on from comic news, we do have this article from Polygon that states the Final Fantasy 15 director heading up new Square Enix studio. And this is an article
called
Luminous Productions.
Yes. So, which is the name of the engine they used for Final Fantasy 15.
Ooh. And to be clear, is this going to be the second director, Tabata?
Yeah, it's Tabata.
Okay. I was going to say, like, if this is a...
Don't. I know where you're going with it. Don't even know. Not even as a joke. No. Just take that idea, throw it away, put it in the incinerator,
and
burn it away.
Apparently, a lot of, like, the Final Fantasy 15 is coming to work with him. So a lot of experienced vets with their, like, him working under him. And their goal is from, this is from Tabata, it says, quote, next project I want to do is a completely new IP. And then he told us that I think it's going to be a very large scale project based around everything we learned and developed for Final Fantasy 15.
So a game that will never finish.
Well, okay. Did you hear the thing report about how he came out and said, he's like, yeah, during the 15 development, like near the end of it, we actually figured out how to do things efficiently and quicker. Which is probably why we've been seeing like DLCs like come out a lot faster.
I'm not complaining.
So I imagine they're going to take a lot of what they learned for that and apply it to this, hopefully.
And make a brand new game.
Yeah.
A last...
Light.
Need a synonym for fantasy. Help me out here.
Last...
Fiction.
Last Dude, saga.
Last fiction, which is like... This crime noir story that's Last being told fiction. As a crime noir, but it's what like grounded in reality.
Fantasy. Last Saga sounds pretty cool.
No, just don't. Maybe we'll get like, and I know he said he's doing like brand new IPs, but it'd be really cool to see something like from the Brayley default universe kind of be adapted over. Because what Square's done a really great job about finding these indie studios and publishing them. I mean, they got Don't Nod underneath them. The publishers for Lost Sphere and I Am Setsuna are also underneath them. Even technically Project Octopath is not Square itself.
Isn't it Tokyo RPG Factory? Yep.
So
maybe they'll just go in like a completely new direction.
Crime Noir.
No, I was thinking more like a first nonfiction. Maybe a primary biography.
It took a while.
We got...
Oh, no, I had it sitting there for a while, just letting you go through your points.
Yeah. But it's exciting. I mean, Final Fantasy 15 story-wise and graphics is just a beautiful game. It's a nice, big, open world.
Yeah.
And they're still adding new content.
But Zach, Final Fantasy 15 was just a hallway simulator in certain areas. How can you say it's totally open world?
It was one chapter.
They also
changed
that chapter.
Yeah,
they redid it. You can play that chapter from two different points of view.
The Leviathan one?
Well, they redid that one. They have a new Leviathan boss fight.
Did they really?
Yeah.
They changed it?
And so the Ifrit boss fight is different now.
Mm-hmm.
Arden's boss fight is different.
Oh.
Chapter 13...
That one I knew they changed.
So there's 13.1, which is Noctis's, and then they also added a new version of it where you play from Gladio and Ignis's point of view while Noctis is off dicking around.
Interesting.
I have a ring, yay!
death.
And then Arden's like, here's your weapons. Have fun. Why are you doing this? I'm the villain.
I like to watch you squirm. Thanks, Darren DePaul.
But that was like one of the big things that I saw during like one of the IGN reviews of it. It was like, sometimes the camera just sucks. It feels like you're in a hallway simulator again. It's like, that's literally in just one chapter for a very short period.
Meanwhile, you're circling around this giant open world.
Meanwhile, I need to go over there. Let me get my car.
Let me fly.
Me get my fucking flying car. That is the fucking coolest part. Because then it actually feels like open world. It's like, woo, I can actually fly everywhere.
Until you try to land.
Oh, yeah, and then you crash.
The latest update where you get off-road tires.
No.
And you don't have to drive on the roads anymore. You just go.
Seriously, like,
they just
the game is so different.
Yeah. Why do you think I keep playing?
It makes me want to actually go buy the Windows version and play through it just in beautiful 4K.
Yeah, it makes me want to buy the Windows edition and play it in 4K. I didn't buy it again. The Royal Edition out now.
Did you really buy it again?
But Zach,
it's in my Amazon cart for when I have time again.
But Zach, just remember, you can buy the Royal Edition upgrade for yours.
It's okay. Well, no, I have everything in the Royal Edition. The Royal Edition is actually a separate game with separate achievements too.
Right, and you can buy that separately.
But I want another Steelbook.
Oh my god.
Okay, hold on. Intervention time. What were we giving Zach shit for last week?
All my Overwatch pops?
No.
Oh.
What do we have two of
video games
in the house? And then he buys one.
Switch is kind of understandable.
We had two PlayStations. He bought one. He bought two Switches.
He bought a
Pro,
though.
Now, what are you doing? You have a copy of Final Fantasy XV with all the DLC already, and you could spend less money by just buying the Royal Edition upgrade for your Xbox version. What are you going to do?
I want to play it on PC. It's a different
Granted,
game.
I have played through... I'm playing through Witcher a second time.
Technically, we are playing Minecraft on... Man, that's not even a good argument. I might switch this over to PC. Because we can get Realms. And a server will host us.
But will Aaron be able to play?
Yeah, a server is going to host us. And then you can play the Windows 10 edition of Minecraft
that's right.
on Xbox.
I forgot that you can do Play Anywhere with Minecraft.
Yeah.
They just added that feature. Free if you already have Minecraft on your Xbox.
And if you want Realms,
which who doesn't
money.
Have fucking Minecraft on their Xbox these days?
Not many people don't have it because they gave it away with Xbox for a while. What's that? You got an Xbox? Have Minecraft. What's that? You're breathing? Have Minecraft.
Dude, I am feeling the Minecraft bug again. I'm like in scratches. I'm like,
I'm still
maybe,
doing
I, should just, maybe I should just get it on my Switch and then we can play Realms on my Switch too.
Well, yeah, cause you're like, yeah, we're playing Minecraft. I'm like, all right, I'll play for a little bit, build a house. Like, all right. I built a house into the side of a mountain cliff. I need to expand another room up higher in the mountain.
Steve also built sidewalks, so we can find everyone's houses very easily.
I built a nice path. I need to build one for Gentry's house now, too.
I tried to build an elevator, and that didn't work. I suck at redstone. Anyways.
Neat.
I think that's all the news for today. Yep. So now we have all of the cool comic book releases. So instead of doing like just a specific recommendation this week, we have two comic books and two movies we really want to talk about.
Spoilers to follow.
Spoilers constantly.
So if you do not want spoilers for Metal number 6, Shattered Grid, which is Power Rangers number 25, Pacific Rim Uprising, or Ready Player One.
That
Thank
I don't
you
know,
for listening.
That is the order we're going in. So
you're gonna miss like half of the episode.
Zach, insert timestamps in post.
That is a lot of work.
Zach, you can do it.
We believe in you.
We'll Kayla see. Was gonna buy me paint for miniatures, and then we realized how expensive paint was.
Well, also, and like then
the
you got it.
Then you got to do the face.
Well, like, and you got to get the holder for it.
We do have holders.
The clippy thing that.
You oh, the clippy you, thing? No.
Yeah.
So if you know someone who likes painting D&D miniatures.
Or if they have D&D miniature painting gear and they want to get rid of it, we'll take donations.
If you want to host a D&D miniature painting night at your own house, let us know. We will not show up, probably. We don't like leaving the house.
What is this leaving the house?
Anyways, Metal Issue 6 by Scott Snyder. Greg Capullo, Jonathan Glapion, FCO Palencia, in addition to the foreword, by Scott Snyder.
Did Joel Jones do the, or Michael Yannon?
Michael Yannon did
epilogue.
Good. It's very much his art style.
Yeah, I was like, I can't remember if this is Joel Jones or Michael Yannon. Yeah.
So in Snyder and Tynan teamed up for that blog, the coda piece, if you will. But it was fantastic. Metal seemed like it went on way longer.
Yeah.
Just because of a couple of the delays.
There was like a couple delays, but it wasn't too bad.
Well, but then there was the supplemental stuff in between that, like,
yeah,
there wasn't really a chance to be like, all right, where's the metal?
Well, here's a tiny little teaser of the story. Have fun with it, y'all.
Here's this tie-in that will make sense next issue.
Yeah.
But I would say this is probably one of my favorite events since Infinite Crisis. Final Crisis, you need like an encyclopedia to follow along with that.
This is like the sequel to Final Crisis, to be honest, if we're being honest. Like the way it, like, because it had so many of the Morrison-isms in there, and it played around with all that lore that Morrison built up with freaking Barbados,
mm-hmm,
and just the tribes of the bat and the bird. Like, like you said, like, Snyder took all of those things and made it his own. Like, he's going to freaking take that and expand upon it.
Yeah, it was very much a love letter to everything from the DC universe. Because my biggest worry, too, reading this was like, shit, we're not going to get Batgod. We're like 5 issues deep. Batman's still losing. What's going to happen?
We didn't even really get Batgod at the
end. Actual God Wonder Woman goes into the Forge.
And then pulls out Batman with the power to create the God armor. Just the little God armor batarangs. I was
Whee!
Kind of hoping that more people would get the God armor, not just Arthur and Hal.
The Justice League.
Yeah, I was waiting for, like, oh, is he going to throw more? Like, we can get armored up Nightwing, armored up Green Arrow, God Arrow.
But what was really cool is that they still kept, like, the, not the Bats Out of Hell, was their story arc.
Oh, the Gotham City Resistance.
Yeah, that they were still in their resistance clothing. Yeah, like it showed them like they're still. Oh, Arrowhead has his doofy fur.
Hey, that fur was awesome.
He had one hell of a beard.
Nightwing also had a beard.
You know why it was? Because it was awesome? Because it looked like my D&D character should have looked like.
Yeah. So it was really cool to see everything kind of finally be pieced together as a story going forward. I really enjoyed just the story itself. Like, the biggest, okay, of course this had to happen, was the Joker coming down for the final fight.
God, that was so cool.
It's like, take the shot. God. Like, bang. I will. It's like, I wasn't talking to you.
Bang.
And I was just sitting there, I'm like, yeah, this character hasn't been seen since the prologue issues with the Forge and the casting. And I'm like, I was just waiting for him to show up again, because this is the only way for this fight could have ended.
Like, say, like, that whole speech during the fight was amazing, of like, you know exactly everything he would do in this fight, except the one thing you never could guess, and that's him working with me. And then them just kicking the shit out of him, chopping off his fingers.
God, that was so fucking brutal.
And everyone was like, I read this in Mark Hamill and Kevin Conroy's voice. And then another Reddit comment's like, so you read them in Batman and Joker's voice. There are no others.
Yeah. Say, like, if when sorry, you when Troy you think Baker. When you fit Troy Baker or who's
Troy
Batman
Baker's up
for
there. I can't remember.
Bender.
John DiMaggio was the Joker for Under the Red Hood.
Yeah, that's who I was thinking of. Who are you thinking
no,
of?
No, I'm talking about Batman from
Arkham Origins.
No, because Arkham Origins was
Troy Baker.
No, Troy was Baker Joker. Was Joker.
Oh, Batman?
Yeah. Who was Batman in that?
I can't remember.
I thought we were talking about the Joker. Sorry.
I know.
Well, let's be real. Troy Baker voiced everyone at one point. He was also Robin and Two-Face.
He's Batman in the Telltale series. Batman.
But just that sequence, too. And especially the fact that we probably saw maybe two.
Roger Craig Smith was Batman in Arkham Origins.
Okay. We saw maybe two of the Dark Knights die. We saw the drowned getting stabbed through the chest, and we saw
God, that was so
we saw Murder Machine get ripped apart.
Yep.
But
multiple times
in that fight, notice how the Diana one wasn't there.
The Devastator?
Yeah. Merciless and Devastator weren't there at the final
fight. Well, no, they were.
Devastator was there.
Merciless was carrying Aquaman in at the beginning of it before Wonder Woman.
Well, and Devastator made a comment about them using the metals.
Okay.
So they were there. They probably just got destroyed off screen or off panel.
They kind of got like caught up in the explosions and shit.
I think during like the whole build up too, they said that this probably isn't the last time we'll see some of the Dark Knights. So hopefully they
we didn't confirm. It's like they made it seem like the Batman Who Laughs is gone. But come on, Batman Who Laughs.
Yeah, if he's any bit of a cockroach as the Joker is during
he's gonna be coming back somehow.
Well, and I could see like Murder Machine coming back because yes, he got ripped apart. But at the same time, he can just reform himself. Like, he's shown multiple times that he can change his body shape at will and change his parts. So what's to stop him from, oh, I got ripped in half, reform? He's essentially living Data at this point.
True.
The only person we know for sure is dead is Red Death.
Red Death, who became drowned.
Like gold life at the end.
For a brief
moment. He became Barry Allen again.
Yeah, and then he got obliterated.
Yeah, it's like, I'm free. I'm dead.
We knew you would betray us eventually.
Like, of course you fucking would, you asshole. Although that costume was fucking dope.
Yeah.
Yeah, this was really fun, and just the ending monologue of Hawkman's just like, in the end, we're all a little metal. And I'm just like,
yeah!
Yeah, I was just sitting there like, this is like that cheesy moment, but it's like, he said the thing. But there's no other way to explain it. It's just like that the word metal perfectly encapsulates the entire series. Because imagine if they went with the original title,
Dark Crisis. We're all a little Dark Crisis.
Yeah.
We all have a little Dark Crisis in us. I like how every time we say we're all, it has to be the Soldier 76 voice.
Well, they've made that a staple now.
We're all blanked now.
I do like how, you know,
the
little Easter egg of every issue has someone doing the metal horns. In this case, Deathstroke during his awesome kick.
Nice.
And Barbados was doing it.
At some point.
At the very beginning when he's on the
I thought that was tower. Just at the end of 5. That was the metal horns.
And at the beginning of 6.
Was it?
Yeah, they said the two. That was like they hit that in every single issue. Because remember, the very first one was Darkseid.
Baby Darkseid.
But
the one I noticed most was Deathstroke doing the kick, because it was like a kick, and then you see him like, yeah.
Was it like the Naruto kick when he dabs?
No. It's even better.
Keaton was Nightwing / Robin in Arkham Origins.
What?
Sorry.
I'm looking. And then the epilogue. Freaking Jonathan and Damien are the band at the end of it.
And Alfred on drums.
Oh my fucking god. They brought that back from, like, issue 3.
Swamp Thing?
Yeah, Swamp Thing.
With a fucking bow tie? Well,
no, it was all of the No Justice teams. Literally everybody from those teams is there.
And the Titans.
Yeah.
And
Terrifics. It's literally like, here's everything new that's going to be coming.
Or at least
all the characters.
A part of the Terrifics.
All one of them.
Yeah.
One of the four. But I really enjoyed, too, how they build up everything for the New Age of Heroes. Mm-hmm. Like, that ending monologue was really
it's
just,
like, I have a
tongue-in-cheek. But
yeah, just like how they dropped all of like the upcoming events of like I saw Green Lanterns. It's like Dawnstar or something like that.
It was something with a D.
One
or Darkstar.
Something along those lines.
To grab our issue.
But then like, and it goes down like, I saw No Justice. And like, you see that more like, ha.
Or it's like the Immortal Men are there, and you see like Brimstone and
Wonder
Sideways.
Woman mentions magic.
And it's like, just...
Fucking Martian Manhunter just appeared.
He was on a mission the entire time.
Yeah, but no, like the ending monologue with that first panel where they show everybody in their fancy dress, I don't see freaking Martian Manhunter anywhere until like the second page. I'm like,
oh, he's sitting
down
at the table. But
he was always
so
there.
Obscure.
You just didn't recognize him.
The coolest part to me was Plastic Man.
Yeah.
It was cool,
how
but also
four?
Unsettling at the same time. When you look and he's got a hand with a shark, a tiger, a dinosaur. He's got a mulcher on his chest, power tools on the other hand.
Yes, he's been tainted by The dark universe. But what was really cool is as he's talking, you see his words get fuzzy and his bubble become distorted. And it just leads up perfectly to him being in Terrifics, where he's still the egg until the first issue when he wakes up again. Plus, the Terrifics have the best concept ever. Now that they're out of the dark universe, they're actually like, it's the cheesy trope from like 90s animated cartoons where they're all kind of like magically stuck together. They can't go too far from one another without being pulled back.
Oh, okay.
I'm like, I got you. They have to work together now. How exciting.
I do love that Mr. Terrific, they put Fair Play on the back of his tuxedo jacket. Yeah. I was like, you know, there's a lot of cool little nuggets that they didn't need to put in there,
but they did.
That they bat did.
Barb has a Bat Girl symbol on her dress.
And she's talking to Dick Grayson.
Yes.
Screw you, all the other love interests. Even though I kind of liked the face her a little bit,
and Ollie and Dinah were dancing together.
And as it should be. So it's really cool to see that a lot of those teams represented there. Even as Bruce is saying, we have to go bigger. Are going to be represented in No Justice as well as the future Justice League titles.
Mm-hmm. I was like, we're going to need to go bigger. But instead of going for a bigger space station, we're going to downgrade to the Hall of Justice.
Which is cool, too.
Which is, it's neat that they're bringing that back, but it's like, we need to go bigger.
Well, I think the station blew up in Justice League recently.
Well, no,
it crashed.
Didn't Murder Machine take over the Watchtower?
Oh, yeah, it did.
Okay.
Yeah, he did.
Yeah, but what's really cool, too, about the Hall of Justice, like we talked about last week, is that all of the teams are going to operate in and out of it. So it's like, all right, the Teen Titans are going to be hanging out here. Oh, the Titans are here, too. Oh, is that Darkseid? Neat. What's next, Trigun? But yeah, the continuity is really cool, and I'm really excited to see how this all just leads up to the New Age of Heroes, which has been going on, as well as No Justice into Justice League.
I don't know why when you said Trigun, the first thing that popped in my head was Vash the Stampede. I was like, what's next, Trigun? But why?
How?
Like, oh, wait, nope. King of Hell.
So, that wasn't the only universe-changing events. We also have Mighty Morphin Power Rangers, issue 25, Shattergrid, issue 1. They killed so many people. Like, the first three pages, they killed 4 people.
What?
Like, yeah, Time Force flying in their Megazord. They're like, wow, a weird space anomaly. Look at that weird crack in the shape of the Mighty Morphin Power Rangers lightning bolt symbol.
Also, shout out to the Megazord reference in Metal.
Well, have you noticed that every Scott Snyder story finishes with a giant robot fight? Court of Owls, he had the bat robot. Nothing in Death of the Family.
You only had two.
Super Heavy.
Yeah, that. They had the Bat Jaeger.
Endgame was the Bat Jaeger. Super Heavy was Robo Bunny.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
And then the first issue of Metal was the Megazord again. So almost every issue has a robot. But
anyway,
but yeah, Time Force flying through space, like, well, let's go check out this anomaly, which I'm still questioning. I know it's in its own comic continuity. West isn't in the future, though. That breaks the whole thing of the end of Time Force. West doesn't go to the future.
Well, the current Power Rangers series also takes place in 2017 and not in the 90s.
I saw that, and it's like, wait, if Mighty Morph takes place in 2016, 2017, does that mean every Power Rangers has to be moved 26 years? So, like, Samurai takes place in 2043. Callahan's response, let's not talk about that. But so Time Force flying towards this crack in the sky, and then it shoots a lightning laser through the Megazord, killing 3 of them right off the bat.
And who did this? Draken?
We don't know, but Draken's giant ghost self is there.
Like, Jen the Pink Ranger gets launched because, like, you have to go save everyone.
I'll close the gap with my Zord.
And then giant space ghost Draken shows up and crushes the Megazord, theoretically killing a 4th Power Ranger.
In 3 pages.
Damn.
In the first 3 pages. And then the mid was like them talking about everything, kind of setting up like what the fuck just happened in 24 leading up to now. Tommy and Kimberly go on a date finally. And they're about to kiss, but then they kind of walk away. And then Kimberly runs back because she wants to kiss him. And then Draken corners Tommy in an alley and fucking stabs him in the back. Like, not even like Utsi Ea Sparks. Sword. Back.
He killed him.
puddle of blood. And then the cover for, is it Go-Go or 26?
26.
Is Jen, the Time Force Power Ranger, coming down from the sky on a jetpack.
Terminator style.
And Kimberly holding Tommy's dead body. And Kyle Higgins put on Twitter, yeah, he's dead for now. We open up 26 with his funeral.
Oh.
Yeah, so fun. Higgins hit up Sci-Fi Wire as an interview. And he says, this isn't something that's just going to get undone. It's part of the kickoff for the Shattergrid event. Tommy's death, along with the supercharging of the green chaos crystal that Draken uses to hop between dimensions, as well as Jen Scott's, the Pink Time Force Ranger, coming back, that confluence of events changes things and it breaks things. And that's the kickoff of the story we're exploring for now.
And, which, yeah, normally he charges crystal by fighting them and slowly gathering energy. But I was like, eh, I'll do it the fast way, and kills him.
And it's really cool that this event really is the 25th anniversary of Power Rangers, and they're touching every cornerstone. Like, you see Draken go to Ninjor, who made the ninja-powered coins, as well as the regular power coins.
Power of Ninjetti.
And he created them, and he's like, oh, let me fix your morpher.
It's like, weird, future me did some weird things with this. And, I'm just, it hurt. It hurt me so much, but I'm so excited.
And it's, yeah, like, for a Power Rangers series, this is super, like, A, it's dark.
So like, the one person to ever die in Power Rangers, like, actually die...
came back.
blew up and then came back. There was no, like, shank and then come back. No, it was, oh, Power Rangers explosion. They'll be back.
Well... actually, that'll in Super fine. Sentai, like, three people died Super of a Sentai. Fire squad. Yeah,
Super right. Sentai is one thing because they actually show blood in Super Sentai.
Yeah.
This is the first anything with the Power Rangers name on it that legitimately showed death.
Yeah. And what's really cool, too, is that with this issue 25, Hyper Force's two-part crossover with Shattergrid takes place in between 25 and 26. So it explains how Draken goes to dick off in the 30 17, whatever year it
where
is.
Where the fuck he went.
But it was an amazing kickoff, and I read that issue just, hey, John, can you actually add this to my pull list? Just this event, nothing else.
That's it.
It was a really entertaining story, though. Like, the writing was super neat, and it made the, like, you know, it actually made Tommy and all of them feel like teenagers, and it's like, oh, dear God, this is, like, you know, Japanese Sentai tropes. It's teenagers and children fighting a war that have real consequences.
Now there's death.
Yeah.
Like, actual death.
I would give it a shot. Like, I would legitimately, you know nothing, and that's almost better than us nerding out about it. Like, just read the first issue.
I'll think about it.
All right. We're making steps.
We're getting there. He's actually engaging in the conversation.
He watched Hyperforce
with me. He did watch Hyperforce. He's saying he'll maybe think about giving it a chance.
I'm still...
we're getting there.
The problem is I only have time for one D&D role-playing series.
You don't have to do Hyperforce right now, but you should try watching or just reading this one issue of Shattered Grid.
Think about it.
Now you're right here. Maybe secret plan sidebar. He can't hear us right now.
Okay, he can't hear us.
Because it's called sidebar. All right. Sidebar means he can't hear us.
Oh, wait, no, let's What's make that? Like the Saved by the Bell scratching noise. It's like,
time out. So what we're going to do, when do you think we're going to watch anime? We're going to do an anime night. We're going to ambush him with the Power Rangers marathon. Okay. Just start at the beginning, go through all of it, all 27 seasons.
Okay.
Get him caught up. All right, sidebar over.
Actually, wait, sidebar again, time out.
Sorry, sidebar part two.
If anything, if we can't do all 27 seasons, we should at least just watch Gokaiger. Because that explains perfectly everything about Super Sentai.
Right, but Gokaiger, not Super Mega Force. Super Mega
no, no, trash. No, just Gokaiger.
And then maybe we can introduce him and still show him Preston, show him about everyone. Show him Peter.
Yeah, no, he knows Peter, yeah.
Right. Yeah,
okay. Actually, in this latest episode of Hyperforce, Peter goes, or sorry, not Peter, Marv goes to meet his parents, and Marv's dad even goes, "You're back! How marvelous!" And I'm like, "Huh, Super Sentai joke."
Captain Marvelous.
Yeah. All right.
Sidebar over.
Hey.
Wow. What?
In no way were nefarious plans being made.
Wonder what you guys were talking about the whole time.
You know, we were going to talk about Pacific Rim Uprising.
How have you not watched a single movie like these past 2 weekends? These are things I like. You enjoyed the first Pacific Rim. Didn't watch it.
I have a gift card to the Alamo Draft House too.
The Ready Player One book.
I think okay.
I didn't even read the book, and it was fantastic.
See, I was waiting for someone I knew to actually watch Ready Player One, because that one I was very on the fence about. I'm like, will it be good? Will it be garbage?
And Steve and I, we both. Steve, would you say you're very easily pleased by movies?
Not pleased, entertained.
Okay.
You keep your expectations low.
I do. Like, as long as I am entertained, even if it's just mildly entertained, I can count a movie as okay. I go in with low expectations because, you know, I don't go and see a ton of movies in the theater. Lately, yes, I have, just because there have been a lot of good-looking movies coming out. So I'm able to have low expectations and just be easily pleased.
And then there's me, where I just want to be entertained, and that's it. There's certain movies I will go and watch that are thought-provoking that I will want to be there for. Like, I thought Mother was going to be this really thought-provoking movie, and then I'm like, oh, no, it's the Bible.
But not good.
It's the shitty Cliff Notes version of the Bible.
Yeah. But, so Pacific Rim Uprising, the sequel to Pacific Rim by Guillermo del Toro.
Look, I had very slim criteria. Like, that's why I do movies. I make very slim criteria with Pacific Rim. Do I get giant robots fighting other giant things? Whether they be other giant robots or monsters. And boy, how did I get that?
Yeah, I mean, you kind of understood what you're getting in. Like, granted, 2012, Pacific Rim was a cult classic. It wasn't really like this big giant thing everyone was obsessed over. People were like, it looks like giant robots fighting giant monsters. This looks stupid. Yeah, that's the point.
That's it. Like, I think my first thought when I saw the trailer was like, holy shit, it's almost like a Gundam movie. Yes,
but they're bigger. So this movie was good, and I was very entertained by it. Like, I liked a lot of the new characters, but it doesn't have all of Guillermo del Toro's, like, slight little touches.
It seems like everybody's main criticisms, like, they kind of, like, went lax on some of the lore they built up.
Not even the lore. Like, okay, well,
like, the drift compatibility thing apparently wasn't very important.
Okay.
Well,
it was.
Which is pretty cool.
They explained.
They do a nice job.
It's a quick thing.
Instead of like them going like, we're going to spend a half an hour talking about drift compatibility, they're able to sum it up quickly in like two sentences, which is fascinating how they were able to do it so well.
Yeah, because I mean, I remember in the first movie, it's like, here's like 10 minutes of like how we got to this point, which I found fucking cool of like them giving like history of like, yeah, but they tried doing the Jaegers to one person. Didn't fucking work out, so they came up with this drift compatibility
thing. And again, they touch on that point as well in just a quick sentence.
And they said it's like, yeah, we have the Jaeger Academy for all the young pilots, so by the time
you get raised
with your squad and you graduate, so you darling are compatible the Franks, with got everyone. It. Yeah, but everyone's like, ugh, child soldiers. I'm like, have you never watched a kaiju?
like, have you never watched anything involving a mech?
Have you ever watched any Gundam series ever?
It always involves a child between the ages of, let's say, what's the younger?
12 to 16.
Yeah, 12 and 16. Yeah. Mistakenly jumping into the suit, or like, I gotta save myself and everyone, I'll jump in this suit. And then thus they get thrust into the war and lose all childhood innocence.
And then there's Evangelion where fucking 15-year-olds won't get in the goddamn robot.
Yeah. Or even Iron-Blooded Orphans. That is strictly about child armies.
Yeah.
Like, there's the space people, and then there's the Earth people, who are 90% child soldiers.
And so, like, again, it doesn't have a lot of Del Toro's small touches. Like, I remember watching the first movie, and after you learn that Riley and Mako are drift compatible. Mm-hmm. You see them walking in sync. You see them copying each other. We don't get a lot of that. We just get like, yeah, they're compatible and they can work things out. Like Scott Eastwood and
John Boyega
are originally in the partners, and they're drift compatible because they were together in the academy. They were both part of the same program. But
wasn't Scott Eastwood in the first Pacific Rim?
No.
Nope.
But because their drift compatibility wasn't as strong, there were some delays to their movement, which is important to the story as well.
Yeah, and they do a really good job of like these little things they touch on.
Charlie Hunnam is who you're thinking.
Oh, okay.
Quickly in like one sentence, as like the whole their drift compatibility isn't strong, and there's a delay.
So they're kind of
when they first drift together, they even make a comment of like, well, drift strength isn't fantastic, but it's working.
So it sounds like they're more like they're expecting you to have watched the first one.
Yes.
It really does feel more of like a sequel then.
It's like you should be like, familiar with some of the lore coming into this, and you should know how some of these systems
work.
You
should know about the breach. You should know about the kaiju already.
And they do touch on that in John Boyega's like opening monologue. And I can understand where a lot of people found faults with it. It's like, especially like the diehard cult classic fans.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's some stuff to the lore that they don't necessarily change up, but they experiment in a way that's different. So, like, the drift compatibility is different. Where John Boyega's character was throughout the entirety of the first film.
Because he's Pentecost's son.
Yeah.
Yes.
He gets kicked out of the academy.
Because he got pissed off because his dad was...
No, it was because of Scott Eastwood.
No, I thought it was his...
No, Scott Eastwood was like... He wanted to show Scott Eastwood a character that he can pilot a Jaeger by himself.
Mm. Walks three steps and passes out from the strain.
Yeah.
So like that's where they keep the lore of like you can't pilot a Jaeger by yourself. He's like,
right.
Yeah, I walked three steps by myself and passed out because the strain was too much.
So some of the bigger problems a lot of people didn't like was like it can be a little too jokey at times. Like during these really serious moments, they would like... crack a quick meme or crack a quick joke. Like, there's this really epic scene with all the Jaegers with jetpacks flying off into the sky, and then the Russian kid puts on the
Trollolol song.
He's like, my mother used to play this song for me.
Like, she used to play it for me when I was a child. And, like, as they're flying up, like, it's just awesome, like, da-da-da-da, and then... It's like, really? Now that kind of cut the tension to the scene.
And there's one character, it was the... but his dad is like a plastic surgeon, so they just keep making like boob jokes constantly, and I'm like, all right, this is a little immature.
Oh yeah, the I want to say like Indian kid.
Yeah, he's from Jesse. He's in the Disney.
Wait, is that the kid from Jesse?
Yeah.
Holy shit, he grew up. But yeah, it's like
I know who you're talking about.
They keep talking about like how like, oh, he's gonna drop out of the academy and go be a plastic surgeon, be a boob holder. It's like, all right, now, like, I get that it's a joke, ha 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 ha, ribbing each other, but...
Let's move on.
It's like, you're wasting some good screen time on these
Review-wise, it looks like it's pretty much about the same as the first one.
Yeah.
Mediocre critical review, and then 86% like the movie.
So, yeah, like, again, the movie has its faults. Oh. There's a lot of character stuff.
Okay, so Guillermo... Oh, Guillermo produced it. He did not direct it, though.
Yeah. John Boyega also produced it.
Yeah, John Boyega was a co-producer.
I was going to see who wrote it.
Zach Penn. Not Zach Penn.
They do kind of leave it open for a sequel, too, which I like.
I mean, we didn't expect to get another one.
I would have loved another one. And then you were telling me about why there was no Riley in it, and it kind of irked me.
Yeah, Pacific Rim Aftermath. Riley died. He had space cancer.
Space cancer.
Because of the antiverse.
When they went into the other world.
When was this?
When they went into the breach.
When they went to blow up the breach, they went through the portal and came back.
Yeah.
Apparently he got space cancer from going in there.
Oh, so that's how they explained why Charlie Hunnam wasn't in it?
They explained that in the book.
Okay.
And... so the book adaptation in the movie, too, is really depressing because Mako talks about it. And she's like, I could never drift again because he was the only person I ever drifted with. I was inside his head. We shared so many experiences with each other because she also got the space cancer and got the same blood transfusion.
Mako got cancer, too.
But Mako survived the space cancer.
Mm. And became a high-ranking official in the army.
She basically became Pentecost.
Okay.
But a lot of the returning characters, all three of them, had some really weird characterization stuff I didn't like. I didn't really like Mako's story arc at all.
I don't think they used Mako to the best of the movie's ability. Like, they could have done more. Like, it was nice seeing the brother-sister connection of, like, it wasn't one of those, like, he hates her, and blah, 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 blah. It's like, No, they're actually a very loving family
together. She should have been the one in the goddamn Jaeger with him. But that's besides the point. And it was really interesting to see how they did the antagonist, because it's like, okay, how can we go from kaiju? And then the trailer makes it like, oh no, there's kaiju, but then there's the super kaiju. That was like the tail end of the movie.
Yeah, like it focused more on
the like rogue Jaeger.
The rogue Jaeger, and then more like Jaeger-ish fights than the kaiju.
The rogue Jaeger was a kaiju all along. And we got a kaiju Jaeger hybrid fight, which is insane. What?
Like, yeah, it's like them wanting what organization wants to make drone Jaegers for better response time, and then the antagonist corrupts that system to where inside the drones are little like Jaeger babies that once he activates the program turns them into Jaeger kaiju hybrids.
Huh. It was really cool. Like, again, if you liked the original Pacific Rim, I would strongly suggest seeing this. The reason I'm being dodgy around certain spoilers is because I think there are certain things you need to experience in that film. Like, yeah, even the new characters, I loved all of those kids. Like, Kaylee Spaney, this is her first big role. She played Amara. She had a really cool character arc. Even, like, her other people. Like, some of them were kind of flat characters, like Russian kid or other Asians and the Russian lady.
Like, there are a couple, like, when they first introduced, and you're like, all right, you're here. But then as the movie goes on, you're like, I like you now.
Yeah.
It was kind of like seems like they had a little more screen time than in the first one with the Russian group and then the Chinese triplets. Mm-hmm. It's like,
you learn a lot more about these kids. Yeah, they're
here, and you're going to see them fight.
Shout out to Chernobyl Alpha and the Triple Triad.
I fucking love the
Triple Threat Triad.
So they still do that. It's like, yeah, this is a Bracer Phoenix is a three-man Jaeger. And then you learn it's two people piloting the Jaeger, and then a third person use guns in the chest. Like, I
was waiting for the third arm to shit. The third arm to, I was like, oh, they're just making the third person a navigator. Wait, what are they doing? Oh,
yeah. For sake of time, because it is getting late, let's jump to Ready Player One. I will say, as someone who's read the book and has a lot of problems with the book, the movie did a lot of things better than the book. Like,
Characterization.
Like, Artemis actually had a story arc. Like, my biggest problem, the second half of the book, like, or at least the last quarter of the book, where Wade, because he's in the real world, creates the fake identity for himself and then puts himself in massive debt. And then he has to work at the IOI. And then while he's at IOI, he's secretly hacking all of their systems so he can figure out their plans and disrupt all of them. Yeah, that entire subplot goes to Artemis now. And who gets legitimately kidnapped.
Which is good.
It's a lot less convoluted than that, too. Like, it's very straightforward, but without making her, like, in the beginning, it was like a damsel in distress situation, but then towards like the second half of that whole arc,
I'm gonna take control of my destiny.
So like the second half is like, fuck that, it's all Artemis being a badass.
Yeah, like again, it kept true to a lot of things, and it made it less so Mary Suey. Like, it's Watts saves the world. No, he needs the Fab Five with him.
Which they were, yeah, they were the Fab Five.
Yeah, so yeah.
I did like that, because the more you guys talked about the book, about him being an incredibly Mary Sue character, I'm like,
the fucking Pac-Man thing.
I don't know if I'm going to the Pac-Man.
That's not it.
Oh, thank God.
It's like, I don't know if I'm going to like this movie that much. I don't know if I'm going to like the main character. And then watching, I'm like, huh, I like that.
Yeah, so the thing that I saw from Alana Pierce of IGN, she compared it, she didn't compare it, but she said, the best parts of the movie aren't in the book, and the worst parts of the book aren't in the movie.
I will argue about one thing from that. The romance subplot still exists because it's so fucking creepy. I hate it. It's just like, I watch all of your streams and all of your videos and tutorials, and I'm like, okay, so you're a little stalkerish there.
Yeah.
And then he goes on, and it's like, I love you. Well, you met her last week. Please. Dumb.
But it is one of those things where, like, It's essentially he was watching a Twitch streamer who he became.
It's kind of that weird.
They even mentioned Twitch by name of like, oh, I've seen all of her Twitch streams. And
but it's still so problematic. Sponsored. It's like the annoying gamer guy thing.
And that's an actual like issue
today. They do a nice job of touching on that of like, you don't even know me. Like, back up. Like, we're friends
but
and
he
all.
Still but gets her in the
same,
end.
It's that same weird. Issue with like you think you know these online personalities because you watch them all the time when they're really just most of the time they're just putting on characters.
Yeah, who says I'm excited all the time? We're immature. We're sarcastic.
It's just got, it's a weird thing. It's kind, I guess you could say it's like almost, if he didn't get her in the end, it would almost be like a commentary of like, hey, this doesn't work out the way you think it does.
Which I would have preferred, or even just like, let's take it slow and just be friends. Good. That's a good first step.
I can see why, like, they couldn't touch much of the romance, because, again, it all happens in, like, the span of a couple weeks, where they can't be like, well, maybe let's drag this whole story part out a few more months. But it was one of the things, like, they kind of had to rush it, and then it's like, oh, you're the same person online, and...
So, in the book, it does take place over the course of months.
But
to the point
there's
where,
like a gap where he and her do not interact for like that.
And then he still
time.
Gets her at the end, which drove me insane in the book. But like I said, that's like the minor thing. I also am upset that they changed the first task. This is one of Kayla's commentaries when we saw it too, where the Oasis was advised for everyone, not just for entertainment, but it changed the public school system. Everyone would get the same education. Everyone went to school on a certain planet and then can do whatever they want on Oasis. So the first task was related to this is some, the first key was like, you can go here, get all of your needs, and then so and so. And then Wade discovers that on his school planet, the Tomb of Horrors exists, and he goes through the task, gets the bronze key. And this, it's like, nah, brah, it's a race. Which is cool.
Doesn't the Acura bike show up in that?
Yeah.
Yes, Tetsuo's bike does show up, and they make a mention of that, of like, oh my god, that's Tetsuo's bike. I'm like, ah! So many cars in that, like, there's so many references in just, like, the race scene. Like, there's the Batman 66 Batmobile.
I can't imagine
the A-Team van.
The rights costs that this
reuse in that scene.
Yeah, so a lot of this, it's like Warner Brothers properties. So, yeah, they still have to pay royalties to it. But some of the stuff was, like, Steven Spielberg stuff, too. And actually what was funny was that the VFX team snuck in Spielberg references without him knowing.
Huh. That's pretty cool.
Yeah. So like they do, they made like the third sequel to The Last Action Hero in the movie.
Oh my god.
Which is kind of neat. And Spielberg's like, yeah, I have no idea that they put this in. And Ernest Cline's just sitting in his chair laughing because Zach Penn wrote this one. He and Zach Penn teamed up to write the screenplay.
I do wish there was a way to transcribe, like, the things I was quietly saying to myself during the movie, because it would just be, like, me seeing all the references. It's like, in the beginning, I'm like, oh, shit, Batman. Oh, shit, Ryu. Oh, God, Hello Kitty. Tracer.
Tracer's in it, like, immediately.
I did notice there were a lot of Battleborn characters in there.
Mm-hmm.
The Eagle guy, the Mushroom guy. There was, like... When all the people are walking out of the entrance portal, there was another battle. Like, a group of four people were the same Battleborn character. When they were going through the shop, there was a big sign that said Borderlands on it. It's like,
oh my god.
Huh, Gearbox. How much did they pay you for this? Did you just like, sadly, no Claptrap.
Okay, so the Borderlands thing, I feel like that had to be intentional just for the sake that we're probably going to get a Borderlands 3 announcement this year, finally.
Possibly.
It would surprise me. Like, why would you, like, spend all that money to get Borderlands in there without any reason?
It did surprise me that they had Battleborn characters in there.
Yeah,
like,
it's like, ooh,
such,
game's gone.
At this point, it's such a dead game that
the game is actually dead now.
Well, no, they still have their servers online and everything, but they've come out and said, like, we're not doing any more support. But it's like, wait, is that the Mushroom Ninja from Battleborn? Is that the weird wizard from Battleborn?
Yeah.
Like, what the fuck are you doing?
A lot of the references were cool. So some of the things that they changed from the book was they changed, what was Simon Pegg's character? Not Halliday.
Zach,
you look it up because my phone's almost dead.
Mundus, I want to say. Not Mundus.
His name starts with a G.
Simon
Pegg, IMDb, Ready Player One. James Halliday's partner. Insert Google search here.
Oh, fuck. I don't know.
Gygor? No.
No.
Gregor?
But
his character wasn't as prevalent.
Ogden Morrow.
Ogden Morrow. So his character wasn't as prevalent, but they did change it up in a unique way. Where that
he's the guy they go to at the end, yeah, right?
He rescues them.
Okay.
At the end. But in this, he kind of plays the side role, but in a very interesting way. And they also explain the extra life thing. It's not in Pac-Man this time. But the final challenge is him playing a game that is the first Easter egg, like from Avenger, I think the game was.
Adventure.
Yeah.
It was the first Easter egg ever put in a game. Because back in the Atari 2600 days, no company let credits in their game. So producers, directors, anyone who worked on the game, like anyone who programmed,
they didn't get any
royalty.
They
got zero credit.
Yeah.
So in Adventure, one of the developers snuck in an Easter egg where if you go to this room that you can only really see like a 4-square block around your character, find a dot and take it all the way to the beginning, his name will pop up saying created by blank blank.
Which is so much better than reciting.
I mean, that's part of Monty Python. Yeah, it's one of the reasons why the ET game is what it is because literally the developer had I think a month to make it. And he's just like, fuck it. I don't care. They're not going to know who it was anyway.
Yeah. So, and one of the coolest changes to the entire story is that they added this whole sequence from The Shining, which is incredible. So it's kind of like the whole, we have to recite everything word for word in order to progress the story. No, they have to ignore the story and actually do this entire whole separate thing. And instead of five people competing for the keys, they become the Fat Five. So you know how Dido, Sho, Artemis, they all team up and they all complete the keys together at that point.
And I don't know if you noticed the pages that were essentially their timer.
Mm-hmm.
If you looked at the words that were making up the key, it was all work and no play, make Jack a dull boy.
And they do...
Nice that you kept that.
Yeah, they do a lot of the classic infamous scenes, like the room 317 where it's the woman taking the bath.
Do they do the axe?
Yes.
Yes.
And it's H going through all of this. Nice. And, I mean, the
twins, the elevator blood.
Yeah. And what's funny is, like, if you know the reveal for H, it's very entertaining. Just like, oh, that's why you're like that. Not stereotyping or anything. But H is played by like one of my favorite actresses too. She's the character. She's Aziz Ansari's friend from Master of None.
Who don't know
also
that
plays black lesbian character, so she's kind of typecast at this point. But she's fucking awesome. The story's just cool. It was entertaining.
Like that movie was
could have been a dumpster fire.
80% story. And 20% references to where if that 80%
50-50. Kind of because
the references don't play a giant role in the story.
That's fair.
Like they're there for eye candy, but very few things actually the suit, which I'm so glad that it was Buckaroo Banzai. That made me so happy. Dude, The Adventures of Buckaroo Banzai Across the Eighth Dimension. Great movie. Not really, but it exists.
Yeah, there is some really cool entertaining things like the final battle. Like I am so miffed that it wasn't like all the spaceships dropping out of hyperspace. Instead it's just everyone teleporting in and leading the giant charge against the gate and the IOIs. Like it was really cool too, just Dido's whole thing of him dropping down and instead of becoming Kamen Rider, he becomes RX-78-2. And as Kayla said, it looked like I was about to cry just because I was so happy.
Oh, like I was having a fucking conniption in my seat because I was like, I can't scream. But I'm saying like,
in a little miffed, he does the Zeta Gundam pose. And I'm like,
Amuro.
I was waiting for him to pull out like the mace.
Oh, wait. Amuro was in Zeta, right?
No, that's Camille.
Oh,
okay. It's not a girl's name. Come on, man, that classic line.
But just like him sitting there like in like the samurai pose, like knees on the ground ready to go into battle, just, I choose the form of Gundam, like
yeah, And they didn't kill Dido. Because in the book, Dido turns into Kamen Rider for 2 minutes, and then the IOIs break into his apartment and kill him.
They throw him out
the window. It's a little dark.
All right. Yeah.
So
I do like that they had TJ Miller as the bad guy, but I kind of wish it was just like a one-off thing with his voice.
Him being a bro?
Well, no, just like start with the TJ Miller voice and then put like a voice disguiser on or something. Because it's like, all right, you got this cool looking menacing villain. Yes, it's ha-ha. He has TJ Miller's voice. But at the same time, like, we can change it away from TJ Miller's voice now.
Yeah, even in like the promo series, like, yeah, I played like this badass Boba Fett-esque bounty hunter character. I'm like, no, you don't.
It's like, remember, you left
Silicon Valley
for the emoji movie.
Well, no, he left initially because he didn't like the way it was going. And even his dad was like, yeah, you need to get off this show. I don't like where it's going.
But he said he wanted to do movies that would take him to Cannes Film Festival.
And
first movie he does other than Deadpool is the emoji movie.
Look, his choices probably weren't the best, but
yeah. But yeah, Ready Player One, I would give it like a solid 7.5 out of 10. Like, it was very entertaining, and that's the most I wanted out of it.
Again, could have been a dumpster fire. Yeah, like, everybody was worried about.
The movie was referenced the movie, which was very entertaining, and that's all I wanted out of it. It wasn't going to be this huge, thought-provoking, or fun action movie.
Well, and I do like how, like I said, the references were probably like 20% of the movie, because they did a good, they could have easily spent like an additional 10 minutes of the movie just pointing at references, like, oh my God, that person has that. Oh my God, that person has that. Like me, when I'm sitting in the background, like, holy shit, in his garage, he's got the Iron Giant. He's got an X-Wing. He's got the fucking Swordfish too from Cowboy Bebop.
It's just, I mean, references like that are fine with me, because it's like, hey, look, if you catch it, you catch it.
It's like, that's neat in the background.
Oh, hey, let me go get my Swordfish too,
which is exactly how the book is.
Yeah,
like the one thing that I noticed was the Tracer cameos were very easily spotted, because she did the blink.
Oh, it's all that and, Blizzard money.
Well, they did the blink, and then they played the sound effect over it, like, you do hear
Cheers Love at one point,
like almost obnoxiously loud that they played it, of like in your face, like, did you hear the blink noise?
It's like freaking Blizzard marketing is in the editing room. It's like, turn that up louder. It's like but then it'll sound weird. Turn it up louder.
It's like that blink could be louder.
A bigger check across the table.
Because like them playing this orchestral music while they're going into the portal. It's like, da, da, da. Da, da, da.
Do you see the battle codes in Spartans at one point too? And it cuts back to reality. I'm really glad they showed this. But it's like a bunch of little kids running around in the streets with VR helmets. I'm like, thank God no one was driving a car. You would be dead.
I was gonna say, like, during a fight scene, they show everyone like doing kung fu moves in the street, doing flips, and I'm like, that's fucking amazing.
But VR is dead, everyone. Let's remember this. This is one of the reasons why.
But it was a fun movie. Like, again, I want to see it again, because now that I've like gotten out of my system of like, ooh, look at that, ooh, look at that, ooh, shiny, ooh, Tracer, ooh, Battletoads, I want to kind of watch it again to see what I missed. Because again, the whole time I'm like scanning the screen of like, Speed Racer, Knight Rider, 18 Van.
Yeah. It was thoroughly entertaining. And like I said, I probably enjoyed the movie more so than I did the book. And not just because of like my conniptions about Monty Python. It was just very entertaining. And it wasn't like, hey, look at that. Look at this.
To me, it almost feels like,
what's this?
Ernest Cline, like, since he did the screenplay, like, took the criticisms of the book. It's like, all right, I can change some things about this.
It's a bummer that they couldn't get the rights to Ghostbusters and truly have the Ecto-88, which is a real car. Ernest Cline owns it. Okay. It's a DeLorean with the Ghostbusters symbol on it.
I do like that they did have the little bits of the DeLorean do, like, when he gets in, it has the whole display on it. And it's like, again, just neat little touches that are like, oh, nice.
Yeah. It's fun. Like, even now, I'm just sitting there watching something again. And it's like, yeah, did you notice that Artemis has the pulse rifle from Alien? I'm like, no, she had a fucking gun. I don't care. Oh, look. Percival is holding the golden gun from GoldenEye. Okay, sweet. He has a gun. They're fighting people. Everyone dies in one shot anyways. But they do make a great reference. It's like, what was James Halliday's favorite first-person shooter? GoldenEye. What did you play as?
Odd Job.
No guns.
Slappers only, which means no guns. I know what it means.
And it's great that Artemis says that line now, and it doesn't make Wade look like a terrible gamer bro. Again, I just hate that concept so much. Anyways, yep. I think that's everything.
Yes, it is. Yep. This went way longer than I thought it would.
Yeah.
Hour and a half.
Yeah, it's just, you know, we were promised 45 minutes.
This is what happens when you get me in front of a microphone.
You said you weren't going to say much today.
I wasn't going to, but then, you know, I just Power thought of Rangers, random shit. And
movies you saw.
Yeah. So, like, if you enjoy, like, sci-fi and action fun movies, you should definitely go check out Pacific Rim and Ready Player One. They are thoroughly entertaining. I think the next movie I need to see is Isle of Dogs still. I need to see it.
I need to see Tomb Raider.
I forgot that came out.
My parents thought it was good, but then again, they're like me. They're very easily amused.
Gail Simone, who's written Tomb Raider, like kind of the rebooted version of her, she thoroughly enjoyed it. Yeah. So it was a fun action movie. So,
cool. But,
I mean, they have good source material to jump off from. Since they're basing it off the new Tomb Raider games.
Not the
ones that didn't really
have
much
plot. Super campy one.
I'm raiding a tomb when suddenly a T-Rex. It's like, okay.
My guns have infinite ammo. How do I get out of the swimming pool? Also, that was the biggest challenge for me at age 7. All right. So thank you guys for listening to your brain episode. As always, if you hit us up, leave a comment, message, or anything else, we will refer to you and talk to you.
Nothing this week.
You can hit us up on Facebook or Twitter or at
ZTPodcast.com/comment right into the show.
And our dear friend Aggravated Art said he might have left a comment, but then we, you know,
I checked.
We also made fun of Dr. Doom again. So he said, I'm not going to do it. And he hurts our feelings.
No, he said he wasn't going to leave a review because I talked shit on Dr. Doom.
Yeah.
If you have an issue with me talking about Dr. Doom, Tim, leave a comment.
Leave a 5-star review and tell us all your criticisms.
Yeah.
Don't use the Facebook chat, Tim.
One job.
You should go check out Aggravated Art, too, on his Instagram page. He just got this really cool Spider-Man piece with Mysterio professionally colored by a colorist from Xenoscope, I think. And it looks hella awesome. Hella.
And he's doing his actual first big boy interview.
Yay. He just considers us hanging out with friends. We have friends. Yeah, right.
Okay.
All right. Thank you guys for listening. Have a wonderful night. Happy April Fool's Day or Easter or whatever satanic holiday you represent. Love you, Internet.
Hail Satan.